following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Thursday, July 25th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Got a great show on tap for you today as we are 37 days away from the start of Auburn football. The countdown, if it wasn't on already, it sure is now as we get closer and closer to the end of July, the start of August, which means college football season is almost here. You've got Big Cat Weekend coming up this weekend for Auburn. Fall practice starts next week, and then at that point, it really is on. And so, on the show today, I'm going to be going and bouncing around quite a few different topics today. I'm going to open up the show with some updated odds, all right, betting odds out in Las Vegas on the first college football coach to be fired this year. Really intrigued by this list. There's some very familiar names on here. Some obvious, some maybe a little confusing. And so we'll get into that today. Also, I want to take a look at Auburn's basketball roster. I know we talked with Double D about this back on Tuesday, but want to dive into that a little bit and sort of begin to preview what that team's going to look like as well. I know football's on the mind. Football's coming up first, but don't forget about this stacked and loaded Auburn basketball team. We got some audio from Hugh Freeze, some more exclusive audio from SEC Media Days. This was not public audio. This is not a public press conference. This was a part of Media Days that us local guys were able to be a part of, and so got some more of that really good stuff in there from head coach Hugh Freeze from Auburn football. And then coming up in hour number two, we'll have Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He will join us as he does every Thursday, and we'll talk all things SEC. So until Chris joins us, though, it's wide open, man. Give me a call. What's on your mind on this Thursday afternoon? 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to me. 334-321-1390. You can call in, be a part of the show, and be on the line. Or you can shoot me a text. If you don't want to talk on the air, that's totally fine. Just have a quick comment or question. You can send that over to me in the On the Line text box. And that number is 334-784-1060. 334-784-1067. So you can get it on the text box. You can get it on the phone lines. There's no reason for you not to be a part of the show today. You can also tweet at me, X at me, post at me. I don't know what the terminology they're using nowadays on social media, but you can do that at Goins2Jacob. You can follow me on there and tweet out your questions there as well. I was looking this up the other day, and it came across my timeline once again, and they were updated either yesterday, today, in the last few days, the latest betting odds for the first college football coach to be fired in 2024, right? You see this every single year across the sport. There's always a handful of coaches that just don't make it through the year, and you hate to see it. You really do. You hate to see coaches, well, you hate to see anybody get fired, right? Any coach lose their position. But I'm not a personal fan of firing coaches in the middle of the season, and I'll tell you why. Unless you've got somebody ready to go, right? I'll say it this way. First of all, I just don't like seeing people get fired because it's a human being losing their job. Okay, you got to start out with that. It's somebody who has a job, is more than likely trying very hard and attempting to do their best, and it just wasn't good enough, and they've got to get let go. Have you ever been fired before? It's not a good feeling, right? It's not a lot of fun. I don't care that they've got million-dollar buyouts and multi-million-dollar buyouts. Like, it still sucks to get fired. Now, it makes it a lot easier when, oh, I don't know, you get paid $15 million to go away and go out west and never come back, right? Makes it a little bit easier. But you see coaches get fired, especially in football season. You see it in basketball, too. They get fired in the middle of the year. And I believe that there are pros and cons to a coach being fired in the middle of the season. I'd love to get your thoughts on this on the phone lines or in the text line. There's just pros and cons to it, right? You fire a guy, let's say he's, I don't know, six games in, seven games in, whatever the case may be. And he is 2-5 in these seven games. It's going terrible. This is year three, year four. You already were probably considering it going into the season anyway. And this was enough to be the calling card of, okay, you just got blown out at home against this terrible team or had a horrible road performance and it's just not getting any better. We got to let you go. I get it. I do. You can kind of reset. You can hopefully, because at this point, think about this. At this point, the team is probably checked out, right? The players are probably done. They're not trying. They've given up. They have no faith in the head coach. The fan base is probably the same way. And of course, everybody in the department feels the same way if you're getting to the point of a guy being fired in the middle of the season. And so the hopes of when you fire this guy is the team will be revived, right? They'll have a different mindset. The fan base will be bought back in, and you can try to somewhat salvage that football season. Brian Harsin is the greatest example of that in the history of firing coaches. It was so bad. It was so bad that they had to make a change. They had to call it quits right then and there. And you saw what happened, right? Cadillac took over, and everything changed. Everything changed. Not necessarily in results, but the mindset changed. The mojo changed. The energy was completely different. And so I totally understand why you would want to let somebody go in the middle of the season. And you then get a jump start, technically, on trying to find his replacement. But I also feel on the flip side that there's a lot of downsides to it too. Right, you fire a guy mid-season, okay, you're not going to hire a new coach and him come out next week. No, you're going to promote somebody from within who's going to be an interim, who then will more than likely begin to believe that he is a candidate for the next head coaching job or for the vacant coaching job. And then you're going to have people that like him and some people that don't, and you're taking a gamble on that guy being the head coach anyway. Because there's a pretty good chance he's never been a head coach in his entire life. I look again at Cadillac Williams. And this is not a slight against him. This is not me coming after him. This is not that at all. So please don't take it that way. It worked with Cadillac because he was a really smart dude. And he is a good coach. And he's going to be a good coach for the rest of his life. But in terms of being a head coach, being the CEO of a college football program, no, that wasn't what you wanted to hand the keys to, which is why when the season ended and Auburn was going through a coaching search, Cadillac Williams was never getting that job. I know a lot of you wanted him and wanted that because of what he did in that short time, which was magical. It was. But he was never going to get the job. And firing a guy mid-season, like, again, I get it. You're trying to get rid of the stink, right? You're trying to get that out as quick as you can, but how much does it really solve? How much of a difference does it make is what I'm trying to get at. And you see it all the time, and they're already taking odds on who the first guy to be fired will be. Now, this does not mean that any of these guys will be fired in the middle of the season. It could be at the end of the season. But I have a feeling that when I start reading off some of these names, and this is from Las Vegas, I believe it's from Bet Online, you're going to agree with me that some of these guys probably are just not going to make it through the season. And you hate to see it. You do. But it's part of the game. Betting odds, according to Las Vegas, on the favorite to be fired first from their head coaching job in college football. You could probably guess. Go ahead. Take 2 seconds. Get that name in your head. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Billy Napier. Billy Napier at Florida is the favorite to be fired first from his head coaching spot. And I've spoken about this before. I like Billy Napier. I do. I like the guy. I think he's a good coach. I think he took a job that was just a little too big for him at the time. And it was a little bit of a surprise when Florida did this and they made this hire. But he also walked into a horrific situation. I mean, just atrocious. A terrible spot. And he walked into a place at Florida across the athletics department that has some of the highest standards in the country. And he definitely has not met those standards, hasn't even gotten close. And the year that his job is on the line, where he is on the hot seat, the hottest in the country, he also has the toughest schedule in the country. So it ain't looking too good. So that's probably a pretty safe bet that Billy Napier could be the first one gone. There's people saying he's not even going to see the Georgia game this year, which is crazy. Sam Pittman from Arkansas is next. He's on there at 5-1. If you know betting odds, you know what that means. Sam Pittman from Arkansas. And look, I agree with that one too. I think he's in that mix. I don't know what the order is going to be. Nobody really knows what the order is going to be. But I agree that Napier will be gone. I agree that Pittman will be gone. How about this third one right here? Mario Cristobal at Miami. How about that name? A guy that was such a slam dunk home run hire for Miami when they made it, and it just hasn't panned out. It has not done anything for them since they hired Mario Cristobal. And I'm pulling up Miami's schedule because I admit I have not looked at it very often. I need to be reminded of what it looks like. I know they opened with Florida, right? That's the big opener that they are traveling to Gainesville, which is really intriguing to me. But let's look at this Miami schedule for just a second. At Florida, couple cupcakes, at USF, home versus Virginia Tech. All right, that's not too bad. At Cal, Auburn went there. We know what that's like. At Louisville, they're terrible. You get Florida State at home. You get Duke at home. A real tough road game at Georgia Tech. Okay. Home versus Wake Forest and at Syracuse. Oh, give me a break. Give me a break. If Mario Cristobal and Miami can't do something with that schedule, yeah, you deserve to be fired. You've been underwhelming and underperforming your entire career there. You can't even sell out 50% of the Hard Rock Stadium down there, and you've got one of the easiest schedules in college football. Yeah, your job's absolutely on the line, Cristobal. I like it. And look, I think Miami will win. I think they're going to be a solid team, and the schedule will make it so. So I'm not shocked to see Cristobal there, because if he doesn't win, then yeah, he's probably out of there. Dave Aranda at Baylor, that's intriguing. How about Clark Lee at Vanderbilt? That's no shocker to anybody. My question to Vandy, as it is every year when this question comes around for them, is, okay, you fire this guy, who you going to get? Who you going to hire? I like Clark Lee. I think he's got the right mindset. I think he has the right attitude. He goes into Vanderbilt and expects them to win and wants them to win. But it's Vanderbilt. Who are you going to hire? Look, you've had two good coaches in my lifetime. Two. Derek Mason was not bad, okay? He was a good coach. And the other guy is still coaching at Penn State. You're not going to find any better. So don't fire the guy. Let him work there, man. Come on, Vandy. Let somebody have another tenure there. A couple of other names on here. How about Ryan Day at Ohio State? He's about, 2, 4, 6. He's 8th on the list. Ryan Day at Ohio State. I'll say this before we get to break. I don't believe that Ryan Day is fired in 2024. In the 2024-2025 season. I don't. The only way he would get fired is if they went 9-3, lost to Michigan again, and missed out on the college football playoff. I think that would be the only way, is if everything that could go wrong for Ohio State, which isn't much, because the rest of their schedule is a joke, the two things that could go wrong, if those things go wrong, then yeah, I could see it going wrong and going bad for Ryan Day at Ohio State. They'll be mad, and then I think the next year he'll be on it, but it's not going to go bad for them. They've got one of the most talented rosters in all of college football, and their schedule is a joke. And Michigan's not even going to be that good this year. Ryan Day's fine. I promise you that. Let's take our first break here in hour number one. Got some more names on here. Also got a phone call we're going to get to here as we continue on just underway on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. Shane, you're on the line, man. What's up?
Man, I was just going to comment on some of your people here that you're naming off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They kind of be idiots to fire Ryan Day. I mean, probably more talented than Georgia is right now. Their roster. And
I agree.
Yeah, if they go like 7-5 or something, maybe. But I mean, the guy's up there. I mean, he wins 10, 11, 12 games a year. I know the expectation for every team for some reason is win the championship or nothing.
Yeah.
But that's what's wrong with that's one reason what's wrong with the sport right now is that it used to be like you went to a bowl game, a good bowl game, you competed well. Not everybody's going to, be winning the championship every year. So, but it's you got to win, or you 3 years, or you're fired. And there's just a handful of people that's going to end up doing that, and there's so much turnover. It's going to be like the NBA where these coaches get fired and they just go to another team.
Oh, I hate it.
Around,
Oh, I can't. I'm with you, man. I can't stand it. It's like, and I think I've had that rant on here before where it's like, oh, you failed in Milwaukee? You know where you're going to work great? Los Angeles. Oh, wait, it didn't work there?
Right.
Wait, why didn't it work? You know what I mean? It's like, wait, you've been a failure 3 times, but we can fix him. I don't get it,
exactly.
Man. I really don't.
I don't either.
Yeah.
This list isn't going to include Hugh Freeze, is it? Because I've seen someone post about that he's on the hot seat for some reason.
That's absurd.
Year two. Yeah.
This list that I have doesn't have Hugh Freeze on it, and rightfully so. Hugh Freeze is not getting fired this year. It's not happening.
No, I know. It's ridiculous. I think it was probably Yellow Hammer or something,
Oh, yeah.
One of the sites from across the state, but... hey man, I thought the Big Cat was last weekend for some reason, and I've been busy, and so I didn't hear any news. And I was like getting a little worried.
I bet you were worried.
I haven't heard anything. Could you speak after you do all this? Could you speak on the recruiting? I'm sure maybe you were already going to, but
sure.
Maybe some of your insights on what we might be seeing this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any commits or.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Yep, we'll do, man. Thanks so much, Shane. We'll go to you as well. 334-321-1390. And I'll touch on it a little bit here today, but what I'll recommend to you, Shane, and for anybody else that's in that boat are still looking for more recruiting updates and some more insight on what this weekend could hold, I had Christian Clemente of Auburn Undercover on yesterday in hour number two. So go check out the podcast at ESPNAU.com. That's our station website. You can listen to the podcast podcast there. They're just our past shows. And so yesterday's show was up. You can go check that out. That's going to be a full hour in the second hour, breaking down recruiting and previewing Big Cat Weekend. So go and check that out. But yes, Shane, later on in the program, I will get into some more of what to expect from Big Cat Weekend. No, it was not last weekend. it is this upcoming weekend. Some guys will be trailing in today. Some will be coming in tomorrow, but Saturday is the actual day for Big Cat. And so, yeah, go check out yesterday's show, and I'll get to some more of that later on. No, Hugh Freeze is not on this list, and rightfully so. As I said, Hugh Freeze is not on the hot seat. I don't care what anybody in Tuscaloosa says. Nobody is believing here anyway that Hugh Freeze is going to be fired. That's ridiculous. It's year two. But to Shane's point, right, the window of being a successful coach, or at least being successful early, has shriveled down so much in the last decade, 20 years, whatever you want to say. I mean, I don't know why or how we got into this three-year cycle of, well, you better be competing in year three or you're gone, you're done, see you later. And it's because you have all the resources in the world to be good. But that doesn't mean that you're going to have immediate success. It takes time. And I think now that could get even worse. I think that could get worse because of the expanded college football playoff. And maybe that's the right way to go. I don't know. I don't think so. But you're telling me that the new head coach at Michigan right now, who is replacing Harbaugh, who just won a national title, with an expanded college football playoff, are they really going to give him 3 years to turn it around? Or are they going to say after year two, this isn't our guy. We'll just go find somebody else. Thanks for your service. I think that could be a legitimate thing. And that's scary, man. It's sad. It's sad and it's scary. And it's scary because it could become true. And there are some programs, Shane mentioned, and appreciate you calling in, man. It's always good to hear from you. He mentioned how so many schools, most of them now, have that championship or bust mentality. And it can be a healthy mindset if you have it in the healthy way. I didn't say that the way I wanted to, but what I mean is you can have the we want to win and compete for championships every single year. That's a healthy way to think about it. But when you look at a head coach and say, if you don't win a championship in year three, you're done. If we don't make the playoff in year two, we don't want you here. That's unhealthy in thinking championship or bust. But if it's, hey, we can see where this is going. Okay, we were a game away in year three from, or year two from making the playoff, or even year three from making the playoff. If our quarterback doesn't get hurt in the final game of the year, we probably are in the playoff. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's the healthy championship or bust. If you can at least see the future or feel good about the future, then keep the guy around. But with where college football's going, yeah, I mean, eventually, it could be 2 years and you're in and out. Because if you don't make the 12 team, then you're never going to make it. Which is absurd to think that way, but that's how some programs are. And to look at Ohio State and Ryan Day, they are allowed to have the toxic championship or bust mentality, at least playoff or bust, because of everything they have. And I agree with Shane that they have the most talented roster in college football right now. And so if they don't win at all this year, they will be upset. If they don't make the playoff, they will be upset. And if they lose to Michigan again, they will be upset. Will Ryan Day lose his job? I don't know. Because then the question comes back in, okay, you fire Ryan Day, then who do you go after? That's what's crazy in all this situation. Dabo Sweeney's on the list way down there at 25-1. Lincoln Riley's on there, which is weird. Brent Venables is on this list, which is weird. Brent Venables ain't getting fired, okay? He's not. He just got an extension. They're not firing Brent Venables. Give me a break. Deion Sanders is on here at 50-1 odds. He's like 20th on this list, maybe even like 25th on this list of odds of coaches that'll be fired first. And Deion is on here. Talk about a team that would be stupid to fire a head coach. That'd be dumb to fire Deion Sanders. I don't care if he doesn't win a game. Colorado has more press coverage in the history of its program right now than it's ever had before. Literally. They're being covered more than almost anybody else in college football. Which I know that gets Shane going too, and I'm with you, man. Colorado doesn't deserve it, but Deion's earned it, I guess. So he ain't going anywhere either, I can promise you that. All right, coming up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, got some Hugh Freeze exclusive audio that I got at SEC Media Days. Plus, we will talk some more Big Cat, and I'm going to get into Auburn basketball a little bit too. That's all coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
All right, halfway through the first hour here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goetz with you on ESPN 106.7. And before I play you what Hugh Freeze had to say to us privately at SEC Media Days a week ago, there is some breaking news in the baseball world. How about the second no-hitter of the 2024 season has been thrown? Dylan Cease of the San Diego Padres has just thrown a 114-pitch no-hitter against the Washington Nationals. All right, had three walks, nine strikeouts, and 114 pitch count, and the second no-hitter of the 2024 season. That's pretty impressive, man. Look, no-hitters are such a rarity nowadays. I know we've been running promo, and not running it anymore, from Mike Greenberg and Greeny, and he was talking about how no-hitters have become such a rarity in today's game of baseball just because hitters are so good now, right? And we have so many numbers. Lindsey Crosby was talking about that with us on Tuesday. There's so many numbers both ways, right? Pitching and hitting. But 114 pitches, three walks, and nine strikeouts for Dylan Cease, who no-hits the Washington Nationals, the starter today for the San Diego Padres. Listen to this. Out of the 114 pitches, on the 110th pitch, this is some Paul Skeen stuff right here, on his 110th pitch of the outing in the ninth, his fastball hit 100 miles an hour, hit triple digits. That's absurd. That is ridiculous. So congrats to Dylan Cease. Wanted to shout that out. That's big news. Again, only the second no-hitter in 2024, and here we are at the end of July. Well, I mentioned to you earlier, and mentioned it just a second ago, that back at SEC Media Days a week ago, we had two separate situations where we were able to get some really exclusive, really good intel audio from head coach Hugh Freeze. The first one was the Dallas Ambush event with Hugh Freeze and Bruce Pearl that I played for you earlier this week, and this one was before Hugh Freeze took the main stage, before he made his rounds and stuff, and so this is what Hugh Freeze had to say, talking about the team, talking about the schedule, talking about media days, just the whole nine yards. This is, again, head coach Hugh Freeze last week with us at SEC Media Days.
I guess I would never say never, but I don't know of any other. We're not currently on anyone else and this close. I would think it would be hard to imagine us adding anyone else to the roster, but I'm not sure how that would even work truthfully. So I think we're pretty set. As far as how do I feel, I think we've improved our roster, both in, recruiting high school kids and the guys we brought in from the portal. So, I mean, what does that mean for us? I don't know, but I know there's, we're certainly more confident in our roster than we were this time last year.
Thank you.
He's had a history of Auburn coaches really kind of jumping forward their second year. Could you just talk about how that works and what the benefits are of having been there a year already?
Yeah, I think if you look at my track record from everywhere from Lambeth to Arkansas State to Ole Miss to Liberty. We've had pretty good jumps from year one to year two. So I can't speak for other programs and how they did it or whatever. I think for us, in our building right now, there's a sense of chemistry that I think is breeding some confidence into the players. Y'all talk to our players as much about this than I do, but I don't know if you sense it too, but I just sense there's a more confident football team, and there's no doubt I'm more comfortable. And again, I've told y'all this 100 times, and I'm not being negative toward anyone, but it's just I'm more comfortable with the building, and I think that hopefully breeds confidence in our team, and we can play really well at critical positions and in critical downs, and we see that improvement that we're talking about.
We talk a lot about the guys you brought in and how much roster turnover there's been, but there's 16 guys left that were here before you got mm-hmm. here. That's it. But how valuable have those guys been in kind of helping to shape some of that culture? And then what's it say about those guys that they were willing to stick it out and play for new guys?
Yeah, you know, heck, I'm probably going to, if I start naming them, I'm going to miss someone. But the 16 that are left, the ones I'm thinking of, Jarquez, Damari, Jeremiah, Keontae,
Luke Beal, Brandon Frazier. Even Asante, Keontae Scott, those guys.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. So, I mean, all of those guys that we're mentioning, that they're guys that we're depending on. And for them to stay with us and say, we're going to help you turn this around and build culture is invaluable. There's a lot of leaders that we just mentioned there. You know, nobody's talking about Jarquez, truthfully. I think he's the leading rusher returning in the league. And I'm okay with them not talking about him, and I'm sure he is also. But those names that you just rattled off there are going to be vital to our success in year two.
Hugh, I wanted to ask you about Keldrick. He's the youngest player to ever from Auburn to ever go to media days. What does that say about him, and just kind of why y'all brought him, and you know how much he's stepped up as a leader as a sophomore here this offseason?
That was a really difficult decision. I would love for them to allow us to bring five people. You know, two on offense, two on defense, and a specialist. But the three is really, really hard. I talked to the coaches a lot about this. There were a lot of guys we could have brought. And to be very candid, some hadn't been as accountable in academics maybe, and some may, I don't know. But Keldrick has just had an incredible voice that people listen to because he's wise for his age, and his work ethic is incredible. And I think it kind of sends a message that, man, this guy does everything, whether it's nutrition, I mean, but he is probably the most accountable guy that we have on the defensive side to this point. I'm not saying others aren't, but I just think it was really tough. And I mean, you had Jeremiah Wright and Connor Liu and Keontae and several others that easily could have come and done well, but that's a tough decision. And don't know that you always get it right, but Keldrick's certainly deserving, as the others are also.
Hugh, I thought I'd seen an update about Alex McPherson, but I wanted to ask you the latest on him. But I also wanted to ask, just to have a kid in Towns Magoo behind him, just what kind of, I guess, confidence does that instill in you that if Alex is still in a place where he's not ready to go, come the season, that you've got a guy in Towns behind him?
Alex is he's still going through a battery of tests. I believe he's going to UAB today. The best diagnosis, as I said yesterday, is IBS, but I think there's probably more to it than just that. But our prayers are certainly with him that he's going to get better fast. But obviously, to have two really good kickers and he in Towns is a blessing. And hopefully we have them both. But Towns seemed pretty natural in the spring game. Obviously, it wasn't a stadium full of people screaming and yelling, but he didn't seem like he had too much fear about going and making a kick, so we're blessed to have him.
Hugh,
you. I wanted to ask about, you know, kind of how you've formulated things with Derek Nix this offseason. I know you talked about sort of the play calling duties in the spring. Have you come to a bit more of a conclusion on what that'll look like? And then if you know the start date for fall camp.
Yeah, first practice is August 1st. So as far as we really have, here's what we've talked about is who's going to take the lead on and on every game planning facet, and that'll be shared among everybody in that room. And then I think from game to game, it's really hard to say, you know, obviously he's going to have free rein on the early downs because we've all planned it and agreed upon it. And until we say we got to scrap the game plan, I mean, these are the things that we want to see. So, you know, he's got free rein there. And Kent probably is going to do third and long for me. He's always done that and done really good. Obviously, we don't want to be in that. And then now that it's back to our terminology that I'm very comfortable with, once we have a successful play or it's not third and long, or I'm going to, you know, have the freedom and flexibility to jump in. And certainly with our landmarks, I usually will control those for things that we want to see as shots and such. But so it'll be a mixture and combination, but it'll be something that we've all agreed upon. This is the shell of the game plan until we need to make adjustments.
Hugh, I just wanted to ask you about kind of how you feel about your overall 2025 class right now and kind of just where you think things are headed going into Big Cat next weekend and kind of that. So.
We had a little really good momentum. Then, you know, as recruiting does, you have a little lull, it seems. I was kidding with the guys earlier that I'd gotten on Will Redmond pretty good because of the lull. But I expect it to pick back up with Big Cat. You know, we're never out of the fight on the guys we want. I don't believe that. We're not going to win every battle. But we're on the right ones, and I do think Big Cat, hopefully we persuade a few more to come with us this weekend or next weekend.
Time for a few more.
Kent, what position or positions do you feel are the either the most contested or the least settled?
Receivers are going to be a rotation, so we got to find, you know, the 5 to 6 guys that can play there. Tight ends are pretty set as to what their skill sets are. Running backs, going to be a rotation with Cobb and Damari and Jarquez. Peyton's going to get the nod there, but need to see the battle going on behind him in case, you know, he does not perform well. Offensive line is pretty set. Just need those young kids to provide more depth. Linebackers, the older guys are going to get the nod with talented younger guys. I'd probably say the most contested. We've got 6 guys inside on defense that you might say is contested, but I don't see it that way. I think we need to rotate all 6 of them. And so we need to – really, it's pretty set who's going. We just need the younger kids – I'd say probably safety is, you think Keontae and Cam, they're going to get the bulk of the reps at corner, but boy, we really need, you know, Kite and JD and Crawford and some of these younger guys, Amon Lane, to somebody's got to get ready to play there. Safety, Thompson's going to be, he's the vocal leader back there, but we need some other pieces to give us some depth there. So, think we're pretty.
Yeah, Hugh, now that the expanded playoff is a reality, talk to me about how it changes kind of the way that you're going to coach this team in the sense that.
Did I lose everybody or just him? All right, I think you're back now. All right, what did you say?
My question?
I did not.
I'm sorry. Okay, so with this expanded playoff, that's a reality now. Talk about how that affects you as the Auburn coach. You're always having a mess in Alabama, Georgia, and LSU. Now, I mean, you might be able to get in with 2 losses. Does it change kind of the way you're going to approach this season and the future season?
I don't see how it can, because you've got to win every game or try to win every game. I mean, the only thing that it may do is you might practice a little differently, particularly if the roster limit comes like what we're hearing. You're going to have to be really careful. You've got to have your best guys healthy. And, you know, I'm not sure it's smart for us to tackle Jarquez or Damari or Cobb all camp, truthfully. But you still have to get ready. So I don't think it changes a lot. You just, you know, particularly if you already have a roster that you feel like is three deep. But we're not quite there, so we've got to, you know, I think there's going to be some positives and negatives with that. You know, the negative is going to be, how in the world do you convince, when your expectations are that of what Auburn is, how do you convince kids that a bowl game is in their best interest? So I think we're facing some challenges there.
That last response right there, that's the one from that entire audio clip. And again, we appreciate all of the SIDs, Kirk Sampson, Shelly Poe, allowing us to have that access back at SEC Media Days before Hugh Freeze took all of his main rotations. And the question talking about just preparing for longer seasons and more intense games in the postseason, right? And you could hear Freeze just kind of go into it a little bit about how it's going to be more difficult than ever before to keep your team healthy. And if you don't make the playoff, and convincing them why they should play in a bowl game, because coaches have talked about how it helps so much for the next season, if you get that extra almost month of practice, at least a few weeks, if you get the bowl practice. And so, look, Freeze knows it's a changing world. And Auburn is in a really unique spot because we can take advantage of that changing world. We'll have reactions to this, wrap up hour number one, talk a little Big Cat as well, talk a little Auburn basketball coming up in hour number two, and Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, will be with us as well. Stick around. We'll wrap up hour number one after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. And we had that Hugh Freeze press conference that he did last week at SEC Media Days before he took the main stage, and had a lot of different parts in it. And that wasn't the whole thing, but I put together the parts that I think you would be the most interested in. The things that he had to say that I thought were most timely. And he was asked about Big Cat, which is coming up this weekend. It starts, the main day is Saturday. Okay, but you're going to start hearing and seeing kids that will start showing up later tonight. You'll have kids that straggle in tomorrow, and most people will be here on Saturday. And, you know, we had Christian Clemente on yesterday from Auburn Undercover. He's our recruiting guru, and he had really good things to say. He said, you know, there's a really good confirmed list already. You're going to have guys that are already committed to Auburn, like Alvin Henderson. That's the guy I continue to go back to. I put him in the same boat as a Walker White. I put them in the same pod. And the reason I say that is Walker White, right, when he was here last year for Big Cat, when he was a longtime Auburn commit, he was one of the biggest recruiters I've ever seen in high school athletics. Like, this guy was wearing shirts and jackets with Cam Coleman and Perry Thompson's faces on it to get him to come to Auburn. Like, the guy was insane. It was awesome, but it was insane. Alvin Henderson is in that same, again, that same area. Not as big, not as crazy as Walker White was. But Henderson has continued to be active on social media. He's been telling a ton of people, anybody that'll listen, since he flipped from Penn State to Auburn, which Christian talked about this yesterday. The whole Penn State commitment was kind of weird anyway. And that kind of gets back to something Uncle T-Bone talks about a lot. If you listen to this show, you know exactly what I mean. But Alvin Henderson has continued to tell, again, anybody that will listen, this is going to be a big weekend. And Christian said that yesterday, and I believe that too. I believe that this weekend is being slept on by those outside the Auburn circle. There's a ton of guys, dozens that are already confirmed. You're going to have guys that are committed to other schools that will be here this weekend. You have an Alabama receiver that will be here this weekend. I believe you have a Georgia Tech commit that's going to be here this weekend. And then what Christian said yesterday that I think really sets the tone for the weekend is He said there's always surprises. There's always shocks and shockers and surprise visitors that just happen to show up. Yeah, they may have been invited, but they may not have alluded to the fact that they were going to be here. They maybe didn't tell anybody they were going to be here for Big Cat Weekend, and they just stroll on in. And Christian said and admitted that's his favorite part of the entire weekend is, okay, we know and we have an expectation of who's going to be here, but what big names are going to show up unannounced? Who's going to make a splash? Right, there was a splash last year. It was Hugh Freeze being thrown into a swimming pool. But maybe they can have some of those again this year. And if the weather holds up, things will be fine. If it doesn't, it won't be as good for the activities. But I think the event and the outcomes will still be pretty good. But I do want to echo something that was said yesterday. Coming out of Big Cat, I think you'll have 3 to 5 commitments total. Few of those in 25 and few of those in 26. But commitments that come later on down the road, weeks and months later, may have happened at Big Cat Weekend. We just didn't know it. Or some of us may have known and it's just not public knowledge. Do you get what I'm saying here? There are silent commits. There are confirming commits, and there are just guys that show up for Big Cat and have made their decision. They just haven't vocalized it just yet. So if it's not the weekend you're looking for, and maybe you only see a few commitments, don't flip out. Everything's going to be fine, but I think you're going to be impressed this weekend and then later on down the road as well. All right, hour number one is in the books. Stay tuned. We'll talk a little Auburn basketball coming up at hour number two. Plus, Chris Gordy, host of Locked On the SEC, he joins us as well. That's all coming up at hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of the first hour, you can go and catch up with the podcast at ESPNAU.com. That's our station website, posted there every single day. And so go back and catch up with the first hour. Had some more exclusive Hugh Freeze audio for you. Also had a fun conversation about the updated betting odds on the first college football coach to be fired this year, and so that sparked some interesting topics and different comments as well. So go check that out, and you can check out previous shows as well, including our hour yesterday with Christian Clemente of Auburn 247, who did a full preview of Big Cat Weekends. All of that under the podcast tab at ESPNAU.com. We're about to get to the phone lines to start hour number two. We also have Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, will be joining us coming up in about 30 minutes. Also a guest update. We will be getting Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, not today, obviously, not next week, but then after that. I believe it's like the 8th or the 6th, something like that, as I pull up a calendar. Looks like it'll be the 8th. That will be the day that Brad Law joins us again on the air, and he will be back with us consistently every week throughout the athletic season from the Auburn Sports Network. So keep that in mind as well. Brad will be joining us in a couple of weeks. We'll have Chris Gordy today from the Locked On SEC podcast. Until he joins us, the phone lines are open. You can give me a call, 334-321-1390, or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line Line. Text box 334-784-1067. And before we get to the phone lines, I need to remind you that On the Line, the second hour of the show today and every day, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. And you can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. Let's get to the phone lines. This guy's waited long enough, and apparently I made him wait because of this. He says he disagrees with something I said. That's unheard of, Terry. You're not allowed to do that.
Really? I thought that's what talk shows were all about.
Just kidding, man. Just kidding. You know that. What's
you
up?
You made reference earlier, Jacob, to the no-hitter thrown today by the Padres?
Yes.
And you said that was the second one of the year?
I believe so.
Now, while it's a big accomplishment, and certainly taking it in the way, how can something be that much of a rarity when it happens almost every year?
Because of the amount of baseball that's played, I think.
Well, I could see your point there, but I don't consider it the rarity. An accomplishment, yes. A feat, certainly. But something is done every year. I mean, a perfect game, now that's a rarity.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I do. I feel like no-hitters are overblown is not the correct word, but that's the only one that I can come up with right now. They are celebrated, and they should be celebrated, no-hitters in professional baseball, but you're right. Perfect games are even more of a rarity, and I think that we should kind of flip out a little bit more over that than we do for no-hitters, which you're right, they do happen every single year. I think it's just because there are literally so many games played, right, and so many different people that are involved, and just how hard it is to throw a no-hitter. I mean, it's one of the toughest feats in all of professional sports, because you're going up, it's one-on-one, of course, all the other factors, too, of your infielders, outfielders, things like that. But in the basic breakdown of it, it is you, the pitcher, versus them, the batter. And with these guys, as good as they are in professional baseball, I think that's why it's celebrated like it is.
And see, I agree with you, disagree, I guess you'd say, because when I was growing up, it was a rarity for Ryans, the Carltons, the Wakefields, the Randy Johnsons.
Sure.
So, and now you got some no-name guys who are never going to be heard from again. What about the guy for the Oakland A's that threw a no-hitter last year?
Yeah, that seems to be who throws them more often than, yeah. I mean, you don't see the, right, the Shohei Ohtanis when he was pitching, or the Max Scherzers of the world. They do every now and then. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see those guys do it here and there, but yeah, it's always a random Thursday afternoon on a random game and a random day with some random dude that most people haven't heard of. Now, this Cease guy is pretty good, but most of them, yeah, you pretty much have no idea who they are, and typically they don't go on and have just Hall of Fame careers. A lot of them do kind of tail off.
I just think we're dumbing down accomplishments a little bit. Some records are never going to be broken. Like Cal Ripken's consecutive game streak, Cy Young's wins. Mm. No one's going to last play long enough. The money's too much.
Well, and I think
twice a month.
Yeah, and I think too, even not just baseball records, but I mean Bill Russell's NBA titles record and things like that. I mean,
never.
The sports have changed so much since then, right? And you have more players, more teams, more technology. I mean, so many factors go into that. That's why I always say you can't compare something that happened in the 40s and 50s to something that's happening in the 2010s and 2020s. Like it's not they're not on the same playing field. You know what I mean? They're incomparable.
I agree. I just think, you know, the no-hitter has gotten so common every year when it's thrown, maybe two, that it's not what it used to be, in my opinion. Now, you're right. The hitters are great, and there's a lot of baseball play. We know that. But I think the media makes too much of it. Like, the media does a lot of things, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, that's definitely a fact. That's just how the world works in 2024, unfortunately.
And last thing, Jacob, leave Clark Lee of Vanderbilt alone. Nobody else is ever going to win there. Why is that? That's a joke.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Look, I mean, the only good coach they had was the guy at Penn State, Franklin.
Yeah.
He could have run for mayor in Nashville and won. He won at Vanderbilt. That's how I thought he was more successful at Penn State, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And if Ohio State was stupid enough, and I do mean stupid, to fire Ryan Day, go get him.
Go get James Franklin?
Go get James Franklin.
Wow. Yep. Okay.
I'll go get.
Interesting.
All I know is a guy won 8 games at Vanderbilt. That's all I got to know.
That's enough of a resume for you, huh?
There's been guys that I won 8 games in 3 years.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks so much, Terry. Great to hear from you. 334-321-1390. I'll speak on the no-hitters once, and then I want to get on that topic again as well because it's just so much fun. The no-hitters, like I said, I think it's celebrated as much as it is because, and if you, Terry, if you remind me, if somebody will remind me, we'll talk to Lindsey about it next week when he's in, Lindsey Crosby. We'll ask him about this particular topic because I'm curious on what he has to say. And I really do think it just comes down to there's just so many innings pitched. There's so many games that are played. And yes, it happens every year, but it's still a really tough accomplishment. I mean, the guy threw 114 pitches, didn't allow a hit, only had three walks, and was still pumping 100 miles an hour in the ninth inning. Like, that's something that we need to celebrate and needs to be uplifted. Then you take it to a whole nother level when you get a perfect game. That is historical. That is something that you should bust out the physical record book and write it in ink. That's what I think. The no-hitters, I hate to say that they've gotten watered down, but I think Terry's on to something a little bit. The feat itself is still really cool, but I get where you're coming from, Terry. I really do. Clark Lee, yeah, leave the guy alone. Let him be at Vanderbilt, man. Let him do his thing. Is it really hurting you? I mean, he's getting a new stadium. Maybe that'll help a little bit. Hopefully the boosters and the donors are giving him a little bit of grace. I don't know, man. But like he said, it's not going to get any better. You're not going to find the next Kirby Smart at Vanderbilt. And if you do, he's going to leave for a job like Penn State. Now, Terry did say something interesting. If they fire Ryan Day, you know, if Ohio State takes the incredibly idiotic step and fires Ryan Day, which I think his job is not safe, but I don't think firing him is the right move right now, to go after James Franklin. My problem is James Franklin can't win the big ones. And he's had plenty of talent and resources to do it at Penn State. Now, I know there's a difference in Ohio State and Penn State. You don't have to come yelling at me, I know. But I think with as long as he's been coaching, Ohio State would go after somebody different than James Franklin. But I don't hate the recommendation, Terry. I don't. I wouldn't write it out. But I don't know. You never know. So, Terry, appreciate you calling in, my man. Great to hear from you. Phone lines are open here in hour number two, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot me a text if you want to, 334-784-1067 in the On the Line text box. I've been talking and I guess previewing that I wanted to get into some Auburn basketball things today, and I just want to look at this roster because there's so much talent on this thing, man. And I know that football season's right around the corner, and basketball won't start until November, and real practices won't be until, you know, later in the fall. I know. But we got all week in the next 7 months to talk about football, and this is just for the next few minutes because this might be Bruce Pearl's most talented roster ever. Notice how I didn't say his most talented Auburn roster. I believe that this could be his most talented roster in his history of being a head coach. I think that's how good it is. Between the returnees, the transfers, and the youngins, you got all sorts of dudes on this roster, on this team, that have a chance to be a huge impact this season for Bruce Pearl. And Daryl Dapperich, who joins me on Tuesdays, now going to be with me on Wednesdays. We broke this down a little bit because I feel like, and again, I know basketball season's still a little bit away, but this roster's being slept on by everybody, including some Auburn people. And maybe when we get closer, they'll start to take a deeper dive, but that's what I'm here for. That's what you have me. That's why you listen to us, because I'll do it for you. Okay? You've got guys returning, like Denver Jones, like Jani Broome, who will be first-team All-SEC, who's a guy that's one of the best players in the Southeastern Conference. He's one of the best four or five guys in the country. All right, you do bring back Chris Moore, who is a fifth-year senior. This is what Daryl was talking about the other day, just how old this team is. Those three guys I just mentioned, Denver Jones, Jani Broome, and Chris Moore, They're all seniors. Chris Moore's a fifth year. Seems like he's been here for 20 years. You have Jaheim Hudson on this team. He's a senior. Chad Baker Mazzara coming back. He's a senior. How about Miles Kelly? He's a senior. You have a Darren Scott. People forget about him. He's a senior. Chaney Johnson, who decided to come back. He's a senior. And Dylan Cardwell, our Tiger Takes guest a year ago for basketball, who is a grad student who is coming back again as well. This will be one of the oldest teams in college basketball. I got to find that stat. I don't know if anybody's gone through and done that just quite yet since rosters were just finalized and really things are getting ramped up for basketball. But I'm willing to bet that Bruce Pearl's squad is one of the oldest in college ball and will be one of the oldest active teams in college basketball. What I mean by that is the guys that play the most. Of the guys that play the most, they'll be some of the oldest in the game. Because, look, you have Denver Jones, who's a senior. And these are just the guys that are coming back. Not to mention J.P. Pegues, who transferred in. He is a senior that you brought in. You also have a couple of other guys on this roster that are older. I mean, you have... you've got Reed Trapp, who's on there as a junior. You have Presley Patterson as a junior. And some of these guys aren't going to play a ton. But you see what I'm saying here, right? You see where I'm getting to. This team is extremely old. How many sophomores are on this team? One? Yeah, one. There's one sophomore. You have a bunch of seniors, couple juniors, and your star-studded freshman with Tahad Pettiford and Ja'Kai Howard. And Daryl said this the other day, and I've been hearing the same thing. Those guys are turning heads at practice. Tahad Pettiford at the point and Ja'Kai Howard as a forward are animals. They're so talented, it's ridiculous. Like, you're going to have a hard time containing those two guys when they get on the floor. What's the rotation going to look like this year? I have no idea. I have no earthly idea. My prediction right now, just spitballing, shooting from the hip, you'll have J.P. Pegues at the one. You'll have Denver Jones at the two. I would love to see Dylan Cardwell at the five, Jani Broome at the four, and run Chad Baker Mazzara at the three. I think that's your best starting five for Auburn right now. I think that's what you run with. That would also give you Chaney Johnson coming off the bench. That's Chris Moore coming off the bench if you want to use him. That gives you your freshman Pettiford as a guard and Ja'Kai Howard as a forward. So when you go to that bench, right, you could sort of rotate J.P. Pegues and Denver Jones. They could always have one of those guys on the floor, I think, if you're BP. I think that's what you could do because either one of them can play the one or the two. You bring in Pettiford as the other one. Whoever's not on the floor, bring in Pettiford. When Chad Baker Mazzara sits down, bring in Ja'Kai Howard. You want to see their body statures and how similar they are? Chad Baker Mazzara, 6'7", 180. Ja'Kai Howard, 6'6", 185. They're the same player. They're the same build. They're tall, lengthy, and can jump out of the gym. So when Chad Baker sits, bring in Ja'Kai Howard. Now, you do run into a little bit of a size issue if you run Dylan and Jani at the same time, which very well could end up where Jani and Dylan don't run together. And at that point, you put Jani back at the five where he's very comfortable. You put Chaney at the four, Chad Baker at the three. And then you got a little bit of work to do, but you're going to be fine. Like, you're going to be okay. There's so many dudes that could play this season. I heard somebody say this the other day. There's not enough minutes to go around. There's not. Which is a good problem to have if you're Auburn and Bruce Pearl. You've got the guards, you've got the forwards, and you've got the big guys. That's probably your weakest spot in terms of depth is big guys, which I know is insane to say, but I'm considering Jani as a four. If you consider Jani Broome as a four, and Dylan as a five, then yeah, you're a little thin at that spot. But if you play both of them at the five, then yeah, you got the best 1-2 punch at the center spot in all the SEC. I say all of that to say this before we get to break. This is a unbelievably good roster. It's one of the best, if not the best, in the SEC, right there with Alabama, which is why we continue to say that Alabama and Auburn will be the two best teams to start the 2024-2025 college basketball season in the Southeastern Conference. You can interchange them. You can put Auburn at one and Bama at two, or you can put Bama at one and Auburn at two. Doesn't matter. Both of those are correct. But what we're going to find out early about Auburn is how good are they and how good can they be? Because Auburn is playing the hardest non-conference schedule in college basketball. It's not even finalized to the public yet. But I promise you, it's insane. But that's a good thing. That's what I want to see. That's what Bruce Pearl wants to see. Nobody wants to see this team run up and down the floor on UNC Greensboro State Technology School. No, you want to see Auburn play Purdue. You want to see Auburn go and play Duke at Cameron Indoor. And that's what's going to make this team so much better when March comes around. Because you get battle-tested early. You figure out what you're weak at and what you're good at, and you adjust to both. You play to your strengths, and you fix your weaknesses. And so instead of getting embarrassed by Yale in the first round or getting run out of the tournament by Miami, you can make a run like you did in 2019. And if there's ever a roster under Bruce Pearl to do it, it's the one that he has currently on campus right now. 334-321-1390. That's the phone number to get through to me. Your thoughts, comments, questions, concerns, whatever you got on this Thursday. Would love to hear from you. We'll come back and talk about what's getting going this summer. It starts right now. We'll talk about the biggest event of the summer before we get to Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC. That's all coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on ESPN 106.7. And before we get to Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, the daily SEC podcast that you can find on audio or YouTube, whichever one you prefer. It's free. You can go check it out each and every day. The biggest event of the summer is getting underway pretty much right now. I think the official day is tomorrow, but I believe some of the events may be going on is the Summer Olympics. Yeah, the 2024 Summer Olympics. And I want to hear from you. Send me a text in our text box, 334-784-1067. Do you have a favorite? A, tell me this. Do you watch the Olympics? All right. Do you watch the Olympics at all, summer or winter? And then if you do watch the Summer Olympics, which events do you like? Which ones are your favorites? I mean, it's pretty much impossible to watch them all because in the Summer Olympics alone, there are over 50 different events that happen in the however many weeks time, a few weeks that it takes them to get all this knocked out. There are over 50 events that they compete in, the athletes do. Do you watch the Olympics? And then which events are your favorite in the summer? Shoot me a text, 334-784-1067. I like the Summer Olympics. I like the Olympics in general. I do. It's something that I grew up watching. It's something that I looked forward to every 4 years because it's just special, right? And yeah, it helps that the United States has always been really good at the Olympics, especially the summer, which is where they seem to do most of their damage, is the Summer Olympics between, think about all the historical, legendary moments in United States Olympics history. The swimming ones are always the ones that come to mind first with Michael Phelps and the relay teams and the year that was it 08 where the relay team, the 4x1 team beat France after they were talking all that trash. And I love the track and field part too. I like watching the runners. I'm a runner myself, or I was anyway. I ran in high school. And so that always, I relate to that real well. The field part, Derek, yeah, I mean, you've got the javelin throw. You've got, I mean, they're throwing all, who knows? I mean, they throw all sorts of stuff out there. And there's even sports that I didn't even know they had. And I've been watching the Olympics for my entire life. I love watching the basketball. I do. I love watching the basketball part where Team USA, I mean, again, you talk about legendary historical teams and representatives of the United States. Basketball is up there. The Dream Team, the Redeem Team. You've got some really, really fun teams there. You have all sorts of other sports. You have ping pong. They call it table tennis, but you've got ping pong. I know a lot of our listeners are going to be keeping up with the golf that happens over at the Olympics. You've got all the rowing and the canoeing and all the stuff in the water, right? Water polo. You ever watch water polo in your life? That's a really cool sport. Even tougher, have you ever played water polo? That's one of the hardest sports I've ever played in my life. I did it when I was in high school, and that's the sport. It's water soccer. It's swimming pool soccer with your hands. It's like handball, but you're swimming and treading water the entire time. The whole time, you're treading water. There's no floor. It's like 12 feet down. You can't reach it. And then underneath the water, they're kicking you. They're scratching you. They're pulling on you. They're doing all kinds of stuff to get the ball away from you. It's wild, man, but it is a really fun sport to play and watch. You've got volleyball. I enjoy watching that too. The beach volleyball, the regular volleyball, diving. Forgot about diving. I'm looking through the list right now. It's how I'm not rattling all these off my brain, I promise. Diving is always really cool. Seems like the Americans are typically not the best at diving, where they'll jump in, it's a massive splash, and then you have other countries that jump in and it's like dropping a pencil in at times. So as much fun as the Summer Olympics are to me, I have to admit I like the Winter Olympics better. I do. I like the Winter Olympics better. I just, it's what I relate to more with snowboarding, skiing, the cross-country skiing, bobsledding, the hockey. I mean, all of the winter sports and the Winter Olympics are my personal favorite. And I know that's a lot of controversy. I know more people, I think, watch the Summer Olympics and keep up with the Summer Olympics more than they do the winter. But I don't know. It's just, I like the winter ones better. I do. I just think the sports are cooler. It's a lot more intense. Heck, even the figure skating's kind of cool. Those guys are crazy. Those guys are insane what they're doing on blades and then on ice. Always does blow my mind. And the bobsledding is my favorite for sure. When they start running down in the half pipe, you got all those. It was crazy. It was crazy, man. All these different bobsled. The Jamaican bobsled team? How could you not be a fan of the Jamaican bobsled team? They made a movie about it. That's why the winter's better. I don't care what anybody says. Winter Olympics are better than the Summer Olympics. That's my take, and I'm sticking to it. All right, we got 30 minutes left here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. You get a break from me, kinda. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will join us coming up after this, recapping media days and previewing fall camps that get started going around the country. We'll have that for you coming up next here on ESPN Radio.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and joining us on the phone lines as he does every Thursday, we had him in person a week ago, but we got him on the phone lines once again. It's Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. You can find it daily on your audio platforms, on YouTube as well. Chris, hope you're doing well, and I know you didn't have to go through any crazy travel troubles getting home from media days a week ago.
Yes, thankfully. But you know, next year is going to be in Atlanta, and if it had been next year, we would all been messed over sent at the airport in Atlanta. But no, luckily we did okay. But yeah, man, it was fun. It was a good week in Dallas, going out all the way to the west, and then next year we'll go all the way back out to the east to Atlanta.
What'd you think of the setup there in Dallas? I don't know if I had a chance to talk to you about that while we were there with Radio Row and all the rooms being right there, electronic media and the main media room and the dining room and everything. How'd you feel about the setup out there?
Yeah, it was fine. You know, it's like in Atlanta when we're at the College Football Hall of Fame. You stay in those hotels and it's a little bit of a walk over. This setup was kind of nice. You just came straight down from your room down to where Radio Row and everything was. So at least that aspect, it was kind of nice. We had some room to spread out and kind of move around a little bit. So I thought overall they did a good job, and I thought Texas and Oklahoma did a good job as the new additions. And the countdown is on now. Now it's all about football.
Well, biggest takeaways for you from SEC Media Days a week ago, it could be from coaches, players, ones that were on the main stage, ones that you had a locked on SEC. Your takeaways from a week ago from SEC Media Days out in Dallas.
Yeah, I thought I was surprised how many people are all in on Texas this year. I mean, look, I know they just made the playoff. I know Sark did a great job, and Quinn Ewers is back. Their offensive line is going to be solid. But I'm not ready to crown them the second best team in the SEC. It seemed like a lot of people were, you know, almost every interview I did, people were like, well, you know, it's Georgia and Texas at the top, but who else you got up there? I'm like, whoa, what? Since when does Texas get to get in the same conversation as Georgia? I mean, I can make a case based on how the playoffs played out. Georgia deserved to be in the playoff over Texas in the showing that Georgia had their bowl game versus what Texas did in their playoff game. But, you know, nonetheless, I thought that I was a little surprised that so many people are high on Texas. It's a new conference. It's new teams. It's you know, coming to the SEC is tough. It's not built for you to just come in and just dominate from day one. Yet a lot of people think that's what Texas is going to do. So I think a little too many people are down on Oklahoma. I get the schedule is tough, but if Jackson Arnold is the real deal, lives up, you know, to the hype of all these other Oklahoma quarterbacks they've had for the last 15 years, I think they're going to surprise some people, win some games maybe they're not supposed to. And then, you know, kind of just looking around, I came away pretty impressed by what Jalen Milroe and Kalen DeBoer had to say. And maybe I'm a little bit higher on Alabama coming out of last week than I was before. I mean, I had them at 2-3 losses before, but, you know, who's to say they can't, you know, go 11-1 perhaps and make the playoff and get back to Atlanta. So, you know, some of that is interesting. The other one is, you know, how bad are teams like Arkansas and Florida and South Carolina going to be? You know, I just interviewed Phil Steele earlier today. We're going to have that on Locked On SEC next week. And Phil's a little bit higher on Florida. He thinks that he's predicting they're going to win 7 or 8 games. And, you know, it's just kind of funny. We talk about how brutal the schedule is. Yeah, but what about the roster? Florida's actually got a really good roster and some good players. And, you know, you win 2 or 3 of those really difficult games, and suddenly, you know, you're not 5-7, and, you know, you're 7-5, and suddenly the fate of Billy Napier looks a little bit different. So those are kind of just some general takeaways. And then the other one was, I think everybody's all over the board on Auburn. I mean, I talked to some people who think that with Peyton Thorne, they're going to stumble and, you know, maybe a 6-6 season. I've heard some people say they think they go 9-3. So feels like everybody's kind of all over the board on Auburn.
I want to jump on some of those coaches you mentioned, because I had a segment earlier today in the first hour talking on the updated betting odds with coaches that'll be fired in 2024. Billy Napier's at the top. He's the favorite. Sam Pittman's right there with him. Brent Venables was on the list at like 15th in betting odds, which I thought was kind of crazy. Do you see, I guess, and Clark Lee was on there too, of course, from Vanderbilt. Do you see those guys surviving the season as a whole? Because I heard that too, that people are higher on Florida than I am. I've got them going like 4-something. I don't see them doing anything this year.
Yeah, again, it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like they've got good talent. So, you know, if Graham Mertz plays his butt off and Trey Wilson, you know, performs like a big-time playmaker and, yeah, I mean, I could talk myself into some of those things. The one thing I know for sure is Vanderbilt's going to be bottom of the conference, and they're going to stink. So, you know, who's going to be on the hot seat or who's going to be fired? Yeah, I mean, it feels like we're probably headed to the end of the Clark Lee era at Vanderbilt. You know, Sam Pittman, can he save his job at Arkansas? I still stand by. I think, you know, if Arkansas is losing games, but the offense is scoring points and Taylen Green's looking good, I think we're headed towards you know, mid-season firing of Sam Pittman and a mid-season promotion of Bobby Petrino, the interim coach. And if everything goes well and he wins a couple games down the stretch, I could easily see them just taking the interim tag off and saying, "You are our, you're our head coach moving forward." So, this is scenarios like that could play out. But I would say Shane Beamer at South Carolina, I don't think they would fire him this year. But what if it goes really bad? I mean, what if they start off 1-5? Like, I think, that they could certainly make a change there and say this thing's not going the right direction. So, it'll be interesting, but I always like to, when we go to SEC Media Days, people always ask, who do you think's not back next year, or who's having their last SEC Media Days? And it certainly felt like perhaps Billy Napier, Sam Pittman, and Clark Lee were all having their last go-around.
Well, nobody had as bad of a Media Days as UCLA's new head coach did. Did you see that at Big Ten Media Day?
I thought it was hilarious. I think it's funny. Like, man, they didn't even give him a note card. I mean, it's
nothing.
Like, he goes up there and he's like, "As you know, we're from Los Angeles. So is USC." And I'm going, "Yeah, man, that's great. Tell me what color the sky is, too." I mean, it's just, he had nothing. And so let's just hope he's at least 20 times the football coach as he is a public speaker.
Well, our friend Doug Amos down in Montgomery was saying he believes that nobody gave him any training and nobody told him he had to give an opening statement. I think he got caught off guard when they told him to do that when he stepped up to the podium. And I think Doug's right.
Well, but you know what? I mean, Mike Leach was synonymous for getting up there and going, "All right, we're here. We're ready to go. Any questions?" I mean, it was literally, there was no primer. He
sure.
just got up there and said, "Any questions?" So, I always think that that's always an approach you can take. But you're right. I mean, but come on. Like, you're a head football coach. I know he's a first-time head coach, but, like, get up there and gush on your team. This is your chance to talk about how exciting it is. And he's talking about how many championships they've won in other sports and stuff. It's like, dude, come on. Like, talk about your team, sell your program. It's also a recruiting pitch as well.
Well, hopefully he learned from it, and hopefully the internet has moved on. They typically move on pretty quickly from things like that. It was a bad day for him on social media yesterday, but there is a new tomorrow. We're talking with Chris Cordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast here on ESPN 106.7. Well, since we're out of media days and getting into next week where the month will change to August, Chris, fall camps will be starting across the Southeastern Conference. Any big storylines you're watching for or things that you're looking to know as we get into fall camps around this conference?
Yeah, I want to know what the backfield looks like for Ole Miss. Life without Quinshon Judkins. I know a lot of people are just assuming Ulysses Bentley is going to step up and be kind of the workhorse. They added a couple guys through the portal, but as we've seen with Lane Kiffin, like, for Ole Miss to be successful and that offense to work, they're tremendous throwing the football, but they've been a very underrated team running the football. I mean, they've been basically like top five in rushing the last couple seasons in the SEC. So Ole Miss, they got to have that complementary run game. What does Georgia look like? It's a good Clemson team out of the gate. Is there any hangover from last year of not making the playoff, or do they come out like a team on a mission with a vengeance? I'm curious to see how they'll respond. But, I'm curious to see LSU and Tennessee's defense. If they have improvement on that side of the ball, both those teams, you're talking about teams that could go from an 8-win season to a 9 or 10 win season. So that's big. And then, a little bit of just what some of these new teams look like. I thought Mississippi State looked really good in the spring game. I thought Arkansas looked good in the spring game. What does it look like when we get into getting ready for the fall? I think there's some of those things I want to keep an eye on. But, I think with Auburn, obviously, how quickly do the freshman receivers step in and start to make an impact from day one? Peyton Thorne, is he taking full control of this team and having good camp days and all that? I think those are all things to watch. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's real, like, burning questions because, like, I mean, look, we used to come into this point of the season with multiple quarterback battles going on.
Sure.
We don't really have any quarterback battles going on in the SEC. I mean, if you really want to get into Vanderbilt and Nate Johnson versus Pavia, I mean, I guess we could talk about that one. But for the first time in a while, man, everybody kind of knows what's going on. And also Missouri, I'll say their running back room as well. Having to replace Cody Schrader, who was one of the best rushers in the country last year. Again, they've done a good job of addressing through the portal, Nate Noel and some other guys. But, are one of those guys ready to step up and take the reins? Mizzou has done a good job of running the football under Eli Drinkwitz. They've had Nathaniel Pete. They've had a bunch of guys who have been really, really good. Schrader was the most recent one, but there's kind combination of Nate Noel and Marcus Carroll, if they look good running the football with a really good O-line, Missouri's going to be a 10, maybe 11-win team this year.
Well, they're going to be good throwing the ball. There's no doubt about it with Brady Cook and bringing back his top receiver, one of the best receivers in college football. And that leads me to what I was wanting to ask you as well. With all the quarterbacks we saw last week at Media Days and all that you mentioned, there's hardly any real quarterback battles going on. They can't all be good, right? There's got to be one or two that kind of falls off, whether it was a good year last year and not so good this year, or a younger guy taking the reins, or a transfer coming in that's not going to pan out. It's got to happen somewhere, right?
That's the tough part. It's always tell people, it's like, someone has to suck. Like, who's going to be the guy that yeah. falters? I'm curious to see. I know Brock Vandergrift was really good highly touted at Georgia as a backup there. You know, is he the real deal at Kentucky? Or is he just kind of middle of the pack? That'll be an interesting one. Connor Wegman, people have high hopes for at A&M, but obviously he battled injury. You know, is he ready to step into this world? You know, Blake Shapen, I like the kid a lot. I've interviewed him a couple times already, but, you know, you played at Baylor. This is a different world in the SEC. So, you know, with having an OC-friendly coach in Jeff Lebby is great, but if you can't read defenses and you can't get the ball to the open man, he could struggle. And then Lenore Sellers at South Carolina. I think people are high on him because he's a dual threat, but until I see it, I couldn't even name for you a starting receiver for South Carolina right now because they lost Xavier Leggett, ended up being a first-round pick, and Juice Wells jumped in the portal over to Ole Miss. So, you know, those are just some of the guys that I think could not be good this year. But I put Peyton Thorne kind of that middle of the pack. What is he going to be if he impresses us all and plays really well? He could be in the top 10 of that list. But I think all the other ones are kind of no, from Carson Beck to Jalen Milrow, Garrett Nussmeier, Nico Iamaliava. I think we expect all those guys to be really good.
Wow, you rattled off Tennessee's quarterback. You rattled that off well, man. How many times have you said that name?
I've been working on it since they recruited him. And by the way, he put out a video. There's a video, I think, it's on our Locked On SEC Twitter, that he says the correct pronunciation. If you need work on it, you can find that.
Yeah, I guess I may have to do that. Luckily, Auburn doesn't play Tennessee this year, so it's not as big of a deal. And with South Carolina's quarterback room, Chris, if it doesn't work out with the starter, they've got a backup over there that's very well known in this conference.
Yeah, and what's funny is, I don't know, man. Like, they got three. We interviewed Luke Doty at SEC Media Days, and he's now just a strictly pass catcher, but he's a former quarterback as well. I was joking with him that, like, if they get in the goal line, like, you get first and goal at the 8, you're South Carolina, you could literally put Lenore Sellers under center and go I formation, or put Robbie Ashford as the tailback, and then put Luke Doty as a wide receiver and have him swing around. Any one of those three guys has the capability of throwing it. So I think that, you know, the big problem is South Carolina's got to get to the red zone, but if they get there, man, they got some options with three different guys who could throw the football.
That's the most drunken Philly special play I think I would ever see, with three quarterbacks that have a chance to throw, run, or catch a touchdown pass in one goal line stand for South Carolina. What a world we're living in right now in the SEC in 2024. Well, Chris, we're looking forward to fall camps getting going starting next week, and once that begins, you know this, it's just news and information and updates coming every single day, and we'll continue to have you on here on the show on Thursdays at 3:30. We appreciate you and your time as always. It was great to see you last week, my man, and we'll have to do it again soon. Hopefully you get to make a trip to the plains sometime this fall.
Definitely, man. Yeah, I'm looking at the calendar, trying to figure it out, and if I do, I'll have to get my Cam Coleman jersey in time ready to wear it.
You're going to be repping like everybody else because he's the real deal. You know that. And I know you guys have talked about him quite a bit on Locked On SEC. So for people that have missed that or anything else that you've done on that show, tell them how they can find it.
Yeah, just search Locked On SEC wherever you get your podcast, and on YouTube. And I had some great interviews. If you missed it, our interview with Jason Jones a couple weeks ago is up there. Really good insight to this Auburn team and some behind-the-scenes stuff as well. So Locked On SEC wherever you get your podcast.
Chris, appreciate you, my man. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, dude.
That's Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on your audio platforms, or you can just search it on your engine at Locked On SEC. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Shout out to Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. Always a blast to catch up with him, and it was really good to see him and so many others last week at SEC Media Days in Dallas. It's that one time of the year where everybody's together, right? We're all together from all of our different SEC towns and SEC nooks of the country, and it's just a lot of fun. Whether we get them on the show or not, there's just so many people that you get to interact with, you get to socialize with. I met so many new people this year too, and Chris is one of those guys that I've had on this show for so long now, and just so grateful for him and his time, and looking forward to having him on as we get closer to football season and, of course, throughout all of the athletic season. So had him on the show today. Also talked some Auburn basketball in this hour. We talked about SEC football coaches and their betting odds to be fired in 2024. That's been a really fun conversation today, and a whole lot more. So if you missed any of that, you know where to go. You know where to find the show after we go off the air. You can find the podcast version at ESPNAU.com. It'll be posted there after the show today before I go home. So be sure that you go and check that out if you missed any of the show. Tomorrow is going to be a fun one, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a fun day tomorrow. Uncle T-Bone's back in the studio, and Jumpin' Jack Hutton is going to be in the studio as well. We did this a year ago. We had a lot of fun with it, and hopefully you enjoy listening to this as well. Tomorrow, we are doing our Auburn Football 2024 team draft. That's right. So we'll have a random order. Jack will stack the deck somehow and get first pick, but we will have a draft order, and we'll take the entire Auburn football roster, and we will do our draft. We're going to draft our teams that we take through the 2024 season. I don't know exactly the position breakdowns just yet. You'll have a quarterback, couple running backs, linebackers. You'll have all that on our team. So that's coming up tomorrow. We're going to have a lot of fun with that. We did it last year, and again, Jack and I had a lot of fun. And so looking forward to doing that again this year. That'll be on tomorrow's show. It's Free for All Friday. That's how we roll around here. Free for All Friday coming up tomorrow. We'll do that. Continue previewing Big Cat Weekend. Get into whatever else happens between now and then, because fall practice starts next week, ladies and gentlemen. And fall practice begins, that means football is back. And really looking forward to all of the storylines going into it, the ones that we learn along the way, and the ones that maybe get answered, or some that get created through fall camp. I mean, there's no real big battles in terms of the quarterbacks or the receivers. I mean, we'll find out a true rotation with that more than likely. We'll have the running backs going through. But just think about it this way. I mean, Auburn doesn't have a quarterback battle. I mean, Peyton Thorne is it. We thought there could be, right? We thought there might be, but no, there's not. There was nobody brought in through the portal, and Peyton Thorne was taken to SEC Media Days. That's pretty much all the solidifying that you need that he's going to be the guy. Looking to see what the rotation is on both offensive and defensive line. We have a pretty good idea, but looking to see what that's going to be like. And then what's the secondary look like? Who is going to be behind some of those senior, junior guys? There's a lot of freshmen, sophomores that need some reps. They need some playing time, coach. We'll find out all that and more when fall practice gets going next week. But tomorrow, again, come back for Free for All Friday. We'll do our Auburn team draft, preview Big Cat Weekend, and talk about whatever else is going on in the sports world. That's tomorrow with me, Uncle T-Bone, and Jack Hutton, three of us in the studio. You never know what's going to happen around here. So you may as well come and check it out, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, stay safe, and I'll talk to you later.